Blog Talk Radio.
Of Sports Tonight, brought to you by Bradford White Water here in November, Pennsylvania. When you purchase your water, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Boy, each week to start off the show that week, I like to welcome Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Hender. Roger, how's the weather doing up here? We're praying for everybody on the road to get safe. And I think we have Mr. Don Henderson on there, Philadelphia legend, and being in Sarasota. Gentlemen, we got to feel sorry for Roger. We got to get Roger down until at least he can see the grass again.
Can't wait to get down there. But I got to tell you, there's no better opening than what Frank's put together with Kate Smith and God Bless America.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I'll tell you, Roger, CNN has been wall-to-wall since about 3:30 this afternoon all over Atlanta, North Carolina. The Duke game, of course, has been canceled. Duke, North Carolina was a big event supposedly to go on tonight. That had to be canceled, obviously. And, boy, the poor people down there, the lady was 8 months pregnant, had to walk all the way home to her house, left her car out in the road. I mean, it must be dreadful.
Well, I'll tell you, Don, they seem to be pretty well prepared this time, and they have not had people out on the roads. Schools have been canceled, and a number of school districts were out from Friday to Monday because of President's Day weekend, but they're off now all the way through. But I think they've really, the governor, the mayor, has done a good job. Now, you move up about, 4 hours, I guess, north 5 hours, to where you have family, Raleigh. That looks just like Atlanta 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, I just talked to J.D. a minute ago, just before. In fact, that's one of the reasons I was late coming on, was because I was talking to J.D. on the other phone, and he said they shut everything down in North Carolina about 3 o'clock this afternoon, but they shut everything down too late. I mean, 85 and 95, they're having all kinds of problems.
Oh, yeah, and when you see the pictures, it's just like Atlanta looked 2 weeks ago. And,
right.
But we got snow earlier because the line across Atlanta, where it was really ice, predominantly ice, was south of I-20. And north of I-20, you got some ice, but the further north you went, you got snow. So we got snow, but now we're getting the freezing rain. So we're getting it on top of the snow, whereas the people in the south, they got it, you know, ice first and then snow, which is not good because you plow the snow, but you still have solid ice underneath.
Well, the amazing thing to me in following the story all afternoon is that the temperature is 34 to 35 degrees. It's not like it's, you know, 31 or 30 or 28 degrees. And you would think a lot of it would have dissipated in the fact of dropping from snow to rain, but it doesn't seem to be happening.
No, it's not. But that it's supposed to warm up beginning on Friday. But then I'll tell you what, we've got a lot of listeners and a lot of our friends in the Philadelphia area, and I talked to Henry Clay about a half hour ago. They're getting another 6 to 10 inches beginning tonight.
Right, yeah. I talked to my son in Flemington, and in fact, I just got off the phone with him because we were talking about J.D. down in Carolina, and you're right. He's saying 6 to 10 inches, and boy, what a winter they've had in New Jersey.
Unbelievable.
You know what, guys? I just got off the phone with
Leo.
How we doing, fellas?
Good, Leo. Thanks for coming on tonight, sir.
Yeah, I just got off the phone with Coach Al Curtis, and sorry I was on late. They're expecting in the hills of northern New Jersey in excess of a foot of snow, and the problem is they've got ice on the roads now, and it's just a total mess. Schools are closed again. They're already used their allotted snow days. Kudos for Atlanta for learning from their first mistake. But again, we're not equipped for stuff like that down here. And I don't know what it's doing down your way, fellas, but it came in here about 4 o'clock this afternoon into Tampa, and it has just been going strong since 4 o'clock.
Not only that, Leo, but we've had a lot of lightning and thunder, which I didn't expect to. Been a lot of late lightning since about 4:30 this afternoon, and the rain came down in torrents. They're saying we're only supposed to get a half inch to three quarters of an inch of rain, but I'll tell you, we've got an awful lot of rain in the last couple of hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a friend of mine sent out an email yesterday, and he said, "Where's Al Gore? Where is he?"
They also had a tornado.
Al Gore.
Yeah,
you say a tornado warning, Frank?
No, they had a tornado touchdown in Mayaca already.
Oh, okay.
About 4:59 this afternoon.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, Al Gore's up at the North Pole where it's warm.
Yeah.
Right.
The global warming effect, that's where he's probably at.
Before we get into tonight's show, I want to dedicate this program to Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, who was met his untimely death at the hands of a perpetrator the other night. John leaves three young kids and a lovely wife, and our thoughts go out. Thoughts and prayers go out to Jonathan's family and his wife Melissa.
Frank, how many weeks in a row now have we fallen into the same category where a patrolman? Whether it be state trooper, county, city, local, has been shot or has been killed or has been seriously injured. Mm. I mean, we're going through a spell here of about 2.5 or 3 months where things have really, really gone downhill.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, guys. I think the days of the free student tickets to the state fair in Hillsborough County are over after Friday night. I mean, they had 99 people who were arrested or detained.
Right.
97 were black, 2 were Hispanic, and you know, the NAACP is spinning it. It's not a black problem. It's a youth problem. I said, spin this all you want, folks. But there was a junior high student who was expelled from the fair for disorderly conduct that tried to cross I-4 and got hit by a car and killed.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's terrible. Terrible.
Some of the officers that got involved in that, they were also injured, Leo.
Exactly.
You know, it wasn't just the kids that got themselves in trouble and were injured. It was the officers that tried to maintain a little peace
right.
and calm it down. They couldn't do it.
The 13 deputies were treated at the scene.
Yeah.
And
some
from
the
story, a story that came out tonight out of Washington, you may have seen it. I know, Frank, being in law enforcement, you may have seen it, and you probably are familiar with it. Two young girls back in 1975 in suburban Washington out in Maryland have been missing since then.
Mm-hmm.
And this is finally surfacing after all these years. And I knew about the girls, but I never put two and two together. The daughters, they're the daughters of John Lyon, who is a tremendous radio personality at WMAL in its heyday,
mm-hmm.
In the 60s and 70s. And, of course, the Lyon family is not going to say anything now, but it appears that the guy that took the girls is in prison for similar charges.
That's right.
He's been, you're right, Don, and he's in Delaware, and he's been
that's
there
exactly
since
right.
The
90s. He's in prison now, and it is just coming to the fore. I don't know whether they've had DNA evidence or what they've gotten, but you're exactly right. He's in prison in Delaware, and this is an instance that happened a long time ago.
1975, and there's a lot of articles about it because we all remember one of the legends in sports talk radio at the very beginning, Ken Beatrice, in Boston and then in D.C. And I know, Don, I remember when we were out at a couple of Redskins games at RFK, we talked to Ken when we were there.
No question about it. And you know, it's just something that's surfacing all across the country right now. You have to really, really, really protect yourselves. You can't think that any place that you may go is going to be a safe haven, because it's not.
That's
right.
And you know what, guys? Here's the biggest problem. And I don't know if you've heard this. And I know we're sports talk and we need to get off of this and talk about sports. But they've executed today a gentleman, and I use that term loosely, who killed a 9-year-old boy, took him at gunpoint, killed him. 19 years he spent on death row. Why did it take us 19 years
Amen.
To put somebody to death? I tell you what, Texas has the right idea. They got him in the fast lane down there. You know, they convict him, they execute him. And you know what? There should be a statute of limitations. You get in there, and they say, you know, okay, we've got an automatic appeal. Great. But that appeal's got to take place in 2 years. It can't be going on for 19 years. My God.
Mm.
That's absurd.
I couldn't agree more. And of course, I'm one that really believes that capital punishment is something that needs to be brought back in every state. It's not going to be. It's not going to happen. But I just think it's something that has to be done. I mean, you just can't keep going on and on and on. And, you know, we look at these things and they talked about, I think we got an email yesterday, Roger, and they talked about, you know, what are we going to do about Social Security? There's no money. The government's going through the whole thing now with the budget again. And what are we going to do with Social Security? What are we going to do with Social Security? We don't have enough money to take. You ever hear them say that they don't have enough money for the welfare people?
That's right.
No, not
exactly.
That's right.
Where's their money coming from?
Yeah, welfare's got to become workfare, fellas. And
you're right.
I'll tell you what,
you're right.
They got to just stop giving away the handouts. And the term entitlement is a misnomer. And I tell you what, fellas, the guy up in New Jersey, like him or not, I think he's going to be our next president of the United States, because he's the kind of guy who will sit there and tell you, look, here's what I'm going to do. You may not like it, but you're going to do this if you're going to get money from now on.
Well, Roger might have a different point of view, but I'm just a little bit discouraged with Boehner. I can't understand how he not only can get anything brought forth from the Republican side, but he also doesn't even initiate anything. I mean, I don't understand, you know, how you could have his position and not able to neutralize anything.
I think he's very weak. I agree with you, Don. And I would say that what I saw today from Rand Paul, I'm very impressed. I think this is the only way you go after Obama. The way he changes laws on his own is by taking him to court. And that's what they're going to do about the NSA and all the other spying that's going on. And it's a shame. I mean, we've never lived through a period like this when you have to take a president to court, you know, because he's overextending his limits of authority.
And, Roger, they haven't gotten straight down on Obamacare yet. I mean, we have got a lot of people in this country who had their insurance who now don't have their insurance because they can't pay the additional $400 or $500 that the Obamacare is going to charge them.
Am I on a sports talk, Joe, or is this Rush Limbaugh?
I'd like to welcome the program, a good friend of the program, a good friend of ours, who does a great job for the Tampa Tribune covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Thank God you're on, Roy. We changed this topic to sports.
Hey, if you want to turn it that direction,
show you,
boys,
we try to show you diversity every week. We don't.
On. Let's go, boys.
We're not on a one-lane alley here. We're diverse. We're all over the place.
What about the Michael Sam situation?
Right.
That's a good question.
There we go. Let's talk about what's going to happen.
Here we go, Roy. We're going for that.
Let's do it. By the way, President Obama was very happy with him. Said he encouraged him. Very happy that he made the decision and went public and called him courageous, which I think he is in a way. It's not the easiest thing for someone to do. But you know, here's the thing. I would hope that the day will come when that's not a story, number one. And I hope that day comes. Just as it once was when a black athlete decided to play in the NFL or in Major League Baseball or whatever sport it is, that's no longer a story. And hopefully one day we'll all be able to look at people a little bit more fairly, and that won't be a story. But now it is, and I think we all understand why. And you know what? I don't know if it's – I guess it is courageous because there's still a lot of people that look, you know, kind of slant-eyed at homosexuals and gays. And I guess I understand it, but because it's different and they don't necessarily agree with it, but it doesn't bother me. And I hope that – here's the thing. Whatever team decides to take on Michael Sam, and someone will, they're going to take on what I hope is just a minor little blip of an issue. And it's, as soon as he's on their team, it's about football after that. It's not about, you know, his orientation. And because I don't think it should be. You know, nobody asks.
Oh, I can't sit that.
Nobody asks the heterosexual, you know, what are you into tonight? You know, what are you guys, you know, what makes you heterosexual? Nobody's asking of that. And I really think it's nobody's business. You know, he did come out with it, but once he's come out with it, okay, great. You know, and I just hope that the league. I think the league can. And I think that his teammates will not have a problem with it. I think if they do, I think they'll be seen as quite ignorant, and they'll probably end up with more issues than poor Michael Sam.
Well, it certainly looks very, Roy. It certainly looks very positive. New York. Mr. Myra did a very, very big piece in the New York Post yesterday saying that if his number's on our board, we're taking it. We're not worried about, you know, what his decision is about his sexuality. We're worried about football players. And if he is on our board, I want to let everybody in the National Football League know we're going to select him.
And I hope 31 other teams feel the same way, and I hope they –
yes.
I really hope they do, and my guess – is that, it, you know, my guess is that the majority of the 32 teams in the league will look at it that way, because can you imagine the firestorm that will start as a result of some general manager saying, ain't no way that guy's playing on my football team? I don't think that'll happen.
But Roy, look what he did at Missouri. I mean, his roommate said there was an undertone in the locker room. Sometimes people were saying some things. But, I mean, he completed his studies at Missouri.
Right.
He was an All-American and the most valuable player on the team. Nobody said anything about, you know, what his sexuality was.
Mm-hmm. You're right, guys. Yeah. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think you have to be careful of. I can't imagine. Just look, the five of us are not going to agree on the topic that I was hearing you guys discuss when I came on the thing. We're not going to agree about who's, you know, whether Obamacare works. We're not going to agree whether Chris Christie's guilty of a crime here. We're not going to agree on that. So you can't get 53 people to agree or to all necessarily accept, fully accept, a gay player in their locker room knowing that he is gay. But at the same time, you know, I know for a fact that you're not going to get necessarily just 53 guys all agreeing with the Bible thumpers that are in those locker rooms, that with the guys who are, the, in essence, atheists that are in those locker rooms. There's little factions all over, you know, in those locker rooms. And
well, Roy, just look at the, just look at Miami. Look what happened at Miami this year.
Oh, that's a mess, too. Oh, boy.
Well, you're right.
That hasn't been settled yet.
Well, no, it hasn't. But again, that's because you're not going to get 53 players to all agree and treat everybody the same way. Some people are going to treat Michael Sam in a respectful manner, and it's not going to be a problem to them at all. Other people are just going to tolerate it, grit their teeth. And some people, my guess, some people will not be able to deal with it. And maybe they won't be able to deal with it because they've got a homosexual phobia. Maybe they've got maybe it's a religious thing with them. My personal belief, you know, is that this is the way he was born. It's his cross to bear in life. And you know what? He doesn't look any different to me, in my eyes, as a person than a heterosexual Michael Sam. I don't look at him differently because of the way, you know, his sexual orientation. And I would hope that most people would look at it that way, but I can't ask, I can't expect everybody to look at it that way.
My personal feeling is that the trouble is going to be during the game.
Have already been bought because they sent out in social media comments about him, and they've already been given fines.
You think some players have already done that?
Yeah, two players in the Canadian Football League have put out tweets, and they've already been fined by the league.
Well, that's what I was saying. I think the problem is going to be, I don't think that you and I and the people that follow football very closely, but once that game starts, you know, those players, I mean, they can be, they can really be tough. I'm not talking about on your team. And I think that's going to be a little bit of a problem once the game begins.
But you know what? I think Michael Sam knows that's going to happen. I think he probably understands that's going to be the case. And it's, you know, you're stepping into it was his decision to come out with this.
Right.
And when you make that decision and you make that declaration, you have to know that there are going to be some people who are not going to buy into this the way you want them to, and you're going to deal with some, you know, you're going to deal with some bigotry. There's no question about it. You are going to deal with it. You're going to deal with some fans. You're going to deal with a player, possibly teammates. Certainly opponents, possibly coaches, and it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be something. And you know, hopefully, as I said, you know, maybe, you know, it'd be nice if a year from now it's not an issue, but my guess is we're still a good 10, 15, 25, 30, maybe 40, 50 years away from that being the case. But, you know, I think we're taking a big step for players like him, and I think there are many others around the league who are probably now thinking about maybe I should come out.
Well, Roger, you and I talked last night. Sustran had our good friend Howard Esco in, as you pointed out. And, you know, there's an area right there of, in my view, overstepping as a fan what you can say to a player. Now, I understand that the player has to be able to keep himself under control and not throw a punch at the guy. But at the same time, you know, I think there should be limitations on what the fans can say, too.
You know what I think?
Well,
guys,
you know, that's a good point. I don't know whether anybody saw it last night or if you watch Fox News Channel with Greta Van Susteren, 7-8.
Right.
But she's had Howard on a couple of times, and she had a point counterpoint last night. And it was the sports director of Fox 5 in D.C. and Howard and Greta. And Greta, at the end, because Howard said that the fan does have the right, as long as he, you know, doesn't curse and things like that, and he said his father did that and used to ride the officials from the time he was a little kid at the Sixers games, taking Howard and sitting courtside. And Greta at the end said to this fellow in D.C., "Steve, you're welcome back. Howard, you're not." And, you know, but I think that's all wrong because Howard had a point. She brought him on there. And you don't tell him, no, you're not going to be able to be on the show anymore because you don't agree with me.
Yeah, crazy.
Guys, I'm not trying to compare it in any way to this situation because I think they're two totally different situations. But I think that whoever does draft Michael Sam, I think the general manager is going to have to sit down with him in much the same way that Fran Fricke sat down with Jackie Robinson. And I think the message he's going to have to deliver is going to be you cannot retaliate. Whatever happens from a teammate, from an opponent, from a coach, certainly from the fans, you cannot retaliate. You have created a situation by stepping into this role and coming out as you have. There are going to be people that don't agree with it, and you're going to have to deal with that. And if you're going to be part of this football team, there cannot be retaliation on your part. And I think he's going to have to figure that out. My guess is he probably knows that and probably accepts that.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think that's something that's going to have to be said to Michael Sam, and I think it's important that it's said to him because I think that's the only way it's going to work.
Well, when the Collins twins made their decision, you know, he came out after his career in the NBA was over. You know, I broadcast a game against Stanford when the twins were playing out there, and we played in Oakland against them. And, you know, they were both great basketball players. Both twins were great basketball. But he didn't make a move in this direction until after his career was over.
Yeah.
You're right. Here's the thing. I think we'd all be naive to think that there aren't other day players in the NFL, probably in the NBA, in Major League Baseball, in the NHL, in auto racing. Take your pick. I mean, they're out there, and that's just life, guys. And you know what? To stamp one guy, and say things about him as opposed to another. I can hope it doesn't happen, but my guess is it will to some degree. And it'd be nice if, much like Manti Te'o a year ago, this thing really quiets down once he's drafted and kind of dissipates into the mist. Because it would be nice if, if Mike Sam could go on and just have himself a good football career and become a player.
I think in the Philadelphia Daily News, I think it was Paul Dama, which had a good point. It's going to take a team with a very strong PR staff. And they use the Eagles as an example, the way they were able to handle Michael Vick, when he came in, and we all know what that situation was, and then also the Riley Cooper situation last year. But it's going to take a team with a strong PR team to make sure they go out, they address it the first couple of days of camp, and then that's it. No more interviews.
No question about it. There's no question that the team that takes on this player is taking on a challenge. It's taking on a distraction. And as much as NFL teams don't like that, someone's going to do it. And you're right. It's going to take a strong PR staff, a strong organization, a strong coaching staff, a strong team. But you know what? If you think the player is worth having on your team, then that's probably worth doing. You teams deal with all kinds of situations in this league, and they should treat this one no differently because it's a bit of a distraction, yes, but if it's treated properly and you don't treat the guy as if he's a freak, hopefully everybody else will begin to realize that, oh, by the way, he's just a football player, and then that's it.
You know what, Roy? Roy, I'm glad somebody brought up the word distraction because too many times NFL players and professional players hide behind the word distraction, and it's really an excuse. My idea of a distraction is something that keeps you from doing your job. Now, I don't know a reporter that taps somebody on the shoulder in the middle of practice and say, hey, what's it like going up against Michael Sam? Or what's it like with Tim Tebow in the locker room? These guys are asked one question, and if all they say is no comment, and Roger brought up a great point with the PR staff, here, we're talking about it now, we're done. The word distraction is really another word for an excuse. The players just don't want to deal with the fact that this is what's happening, but it's not affecting their job. They just don't want to deal with a reporter coming up day in and day out and saying, what about this, what about that? But
exactly.
It's all after the fact, and it's all in a one-hour open locker room. Am I correct, Roy?
No, you're absolutely right, Leo. You nailed it. You're right. It only becomes a distraction if you allow it to become a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And again, that's why I think it will take a – there are some organizations guys who aren't going to touch this. Publicly, they'll say, if necessary, that I would draft that man in a minute if he's available to me. But I promise you, teams will pass on him because of it, because they can't handle the distraction. They can't. They don't want to take it on because they're afraid of it. They're not strong enough. A team like New England, my guess is, not going to be a problem for them. Denver, not going to be a problem for them. Seattle, not going to be a problem for them. You know, a team like the Browns, they got all kinds of issues. It's a problem for them.
yeah. Everything is a problem for them.
They aren't going to take this on because they know they can't handle it, or they're afraid they won't be able to handle it. But there are other teams out there who are very confident in what they're doing. And there are probably some who feel confident that they could handle it, and they can't. But that's why I hope the right team picks him. It's going to have to be a very strong coach, as we already said. It's going to be a very strong organization that takes him on.
Well, Roy, let's jump to another topic, because Roger and I have talked about this as well, and I know Tommy and Frank have, and that's Joe Banner. I mean, boy, has a guy gone from all the way up at the top to all the way down to the bottom in a shorter period of time than this?
This is what happens when you end up with the Cleveland Browns, guys. There is no more dysfunctional organization in sports. In sports.
Tommy, your team, Tommy.
I know. What can I do? Bring back the late Art Modell. At least he ran a good organization at Cleveland. The owner of the Browns is involved in that oil scandal for that.
Right.
The powdered oil, whatever. Now he gets Joe Banner from Philadelphia. But, guys, let's throw this question out. If Joe Banner left a long time ago, how good a team the Eagles would have been with Andy Reid without Joe Banner in there?
Well, I sent this out. Mike Sielski had a great column today in the Inquirer. I think I sent it to you guys.
Okay.
And I've known Mike a long time, and Don has, he's in the Sports Writers Association. He really nailed it. And I went to Mike and I told him what a great column it was, but I also have heard that Joe Banner wanted to get rid of Andy Reid after the first year because he's a very impatient guy. And people that have worked for him at the Eagles will tell you he's a very impatient guy. And Jeffrey Lurie overruled Joe Banner about getting rid of Andy Reid. And, of course, then the next year things started to take off. I don't know how you can evaluate a coach like Rod Sezinski in 1 year. I just don't.
Roger, when he came back to Philadelphia, and just fill some of the listeners in on it, because I worked very close with him at 1210. I mean, he came in as an intern.
He
was an intern. It was unbelievable. When he came back as the front man under Jeffrey Lurie when they took over the Eagles, there is nobody that could ever believe that this guy would wind up as the mouthpiece for Jeffrey Lurie and the Philadelphia Eagles. Unbelievable.
Guys, I think the biggest problem happening in Cleveland is not Joe Banner's gone, but it's not Joe Banner, and it's not the coach, and it's the owner. When owners start trying to take on positions that they're not equipped to handle, problems develop. Look, we've seen it repeatedly in Dallas. We've seen it in Washington. It's a mistake. And if you let the football people handle the football will be fine. Eventually, it'll be okay.
Thank you.
But when you start making decisions, when you sit in, and you know what, owners should sit in on GM hire interviews, and they should sit in on coach interviews and things like that. But just because you happen to like what this guy's saying, if your GM doesn't, you got to trust that GM is going to make the right call. And if you don't trust him, then he should be out. And if you don't trust him, he should be out. And he's out. And I guess maybe Haslam doesn't trust Joe Banner, but the fact that Haslam's making the calls there, that's a mistake. You got to leave it to the football team.
Well, Roy,
thank
did you hear the possibility that what brought this to a head was because Banner wouldn't allow the team to interview Greg Schiano?
Well, no, it wasn't because they didn't allow him to. It's because they interviewed him and Haslam liked him. Banner said, "Nah, he's not my guy. I don't want him." And they had a disagreement. And so then the theory now is that despite two phone calls from Bill Belichick praising Greg Schiano and one apparently from Urban Meyer, according to Peter King, on SI.com, or his Monday Morning Quarterback site, I guess it is. It seemed as if the plaudits for Greg Schiano were coming in again, and Haslam heard him and was intrigued, and Joe Banner wasn't buying it, and Joe Banner said, no friggin' way. And Haslam didn't like it, and maybe that's what led to this move. I hope that's not it, because if it is, then you got, we all know it's dysfunctional, but that just tells you it's even worse than we thought. But, to me, that's a sign that the owner's taken over too much control in this situation, and he's not winning
right.
for the football team.
You know what, guys? And here comes the problem. And Roy, you and I have seen it on so many occasions in Dallas and in Washington, but it's hard to find the owner that knows the line and where to stay on the line. I mean, we love the Blazers because they really just, they're there, and they let the football people do what they're supposed to do. You hate the Jerry Joneses and the mm-hmm. Snyders because they think they're football people. But the funny thing is, you've got guys, it's their money. And if they're sitting there and they don't trust the guy, and Roy, you hit the nail on the head. If you don't trust them, you got to get somebody in there you can trust. Because,
right.
I mean, can you imagine Cleveland doing this again next year? The problem is we all sit here and go, yeah, we can see it happening again. And that's
well,
the worst
yes, you
part.
Can see it happening again because of, the mess they went through to get the coach they got. And, look, you might be fine, but come on, you had legitimate head coaching candidates just saying, look, I'm out of this thing, because they don't want to be a part of it. They could sense that there were problems developing there, and that situation is bad enough as it is, and they can sense that it's only getting worse. So, yeah, it's a real problem, guys, and it's sad. It's really sad because, you know what, the fans in Cleveland have been extremely loyal. They put up
right.
with this now for way too long. It's one of the glory franchises in the history of
right.
the league. And,
they got their new stadium.
Right. I'll tell you what. The league is too big for this, but I'm a little surprised. And if this maybe continues to go on, at some point, does the NFL step in and try to say, hey, we're going to take over this franchise because it is a mess and the fans deserve better? I wonder if that has crossed anybody's mind in the executive offices in New York yet, because I think it should have.
I don't know if we'll get to that, but I bet some of the consciences of the NFL ownership get together with Haslam and say, hey, get your act together out there. You're becoming the embarrassment of the league. And
well, Leo,
fans,
Oakland has been in the same boat now for 10 years. I mean, they change quarterbacks like you change underwear. I mean, and they still don't have anything.
Don? Yeah, I agree with you there, but they're on the left coast. They're 3 hours behind. Cleveland is a model franchise. This is something, you go back to Paul Brown, you go back to Art Modell. All of a sudden, Cleveland has become the laughing stock of not just the NFL, the laughing stock of pro sports. And, Roy, we were around when the Buccaneers were that joke.
We were.
Nobody likes
yeah,
to hear that part.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what? That's the thing. It's not that hard, really, to change it. And, it takes the right ownership with the right idea. Leo, you hit it on the head. You nailed it. That's exactly what it is. We hate the Glazers sometimes because they never say a word. But you know what? I think I'd rather have ownership who never says a word and just kind of sits on the sidelines and pays the paychecks or signs the paychecks and glad hands the guys after a loss, after a victory, and supports the team, as opposed to some owner that thinks he knows football and goes in there and mucks it up. Because there's no question, that's what's happening in Cleveland. And again, the fans are the ones suffering.
But, Roy, you got to step up here because the Glazers did, with Seattle. They stepped right up and they took a big bite.
Yeah.
Hey, gentlemen.
Well,
gentlemen, we'll change gears for a minute. Roy, love for you to come on here. We've got a good friend of mine who plays for the Tampa Bay Rays. He'll be going to beautiful Port Charlotte. He plays right field DH for the Rays. Gentlemen, welcome, Mr. Matt Joyce. Matt, welcome to the program. Talking to Roy Cummings, Leo Haggerty, Don Henderson, and Roger Hendler, and Frank Carroll. Matt, welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. We got the whole crew in there. What's up, guys? How we doing?
Matt, I want to wish you all the luck in the world this year. It was spring training getting ready. We're anxious to see you land. I know you're not too happy about the extra DH duties, but, hey, if you can get 500 at bats this year, pal, everybody's going to be very happy, I'm thinking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Darn right.
Yeah, I'll take all that luck you want to throw me. And sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. You guys know that. But exactly like you said. I mean, you got to take what you're given. You know, our team's in a different position to where a lot of guys can go out and start. We have a lot of extremely depth. We have crazy depth going into the minor leagues, and any one of these guys can come up and play almost every day. So, you know, like I said, you got to take what you're given, and right now I'm given an opportunity to go play Major League Baseball, and hopefully I do get 500 at bat.
Matt, I think that one of the big keys is going to be Price. I think he had a shaky year last year with injuries and this and that, didn't get off to a great start. I think this is his year to make a giant comeback.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a tremendously talented kid, and honestly one of my favorite people in the clubhouse. He's a big kid, and he always has fun, and it's pretty cool to see him. You know, he's two different people on game day than any other day, but really a great competitor and one of those guys you really want on your team. So I agree with you. He's definitely going to have a big year.
Hey, man, I got a question for you. This is Leo Haggerty. Is this the year, looking at what the Rays have done, giving Price the big contract for 1 year and giving David a lot of credit? You know, he could have stayed out and got a bigger contract somewhere else, but is this the year we're looking at, we're all in, we're going to take our run this year? You know, you got Balfour coming back. You got a lot of pieces to the puzzle starting to fit in. Is this the year you think you can make that big push?
Well, I think the Rays front office has done a great job the last couple of years of putting together a team that is, you know, able to go into the playoffs and has a chance at the World Series. And obviously with signing guys like Balfour, like you said, bringing Heath Bell over, you know, Loney signing a deal that, you know, like you said, he could have got more out there. You know, it's a great team. As you guys know, when the season starts, anything could happen. You know, hopefully for us, we stay healthy, and that's going to be a big part to our success. And like you said, I think we definitely have a chance to go in the playoffs and possibly World Series.
Matt, as I said before, I'll make it right now. It's February 10th or 11th, whatever the day it is. You're gonna have a souvenir on that finger. One big party at the Trop. One big party at the Tampa Bay area. My friend, you're gonna be a World Series champion this year.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. I like that idea.
Well, the one thing Joe talked about at great length was the bullpen, and I really have to agree that going into spring training, it looks like, you know, you've got 7-inning guys, 8-inning guy, 9-inning guy. I mean, the depth of the bullpen looks to be in great shape.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. You know, the obviously losing Rodney and trading away Torres, you know, was something that happened to take place this offseason. But, I mean, getting guys like Balfour and, like I said, Heath Bell and these other guys that have stepped up last year, you know, man, the bullpen, you guys know, nowadays is crucial to the game. When you get later in the game, you got to have those guys that can throw the 6, 7, 8 innings and set it up for a closer. And, you know, the game's changing to where it's really becoming specific and a lot more chess moves that you see Joe make. But, yeah, I think that's really where the Rays have concentrated, spending their money. And I think it's smart. I think it's a smart decision. It's a smart investment. And obviously, you know, it's going to give us a chance for success.
You know what, Matt? I asked Joe a lot of times. I said, Joe, 90% of the game is pitching and the other 10% of the game is pitching, isn't it? And Joe would say they should call it pitch ball instead of baseball. And he made the statement a couple of years ago that I want 1,000 innings out of my starters. And I'm a math guy, and I said, Joe, that means you're going to get 6 2/3 out of every starter. Isn't it nice knowing that your guys go out and eat innings as starters?
Yeah, I mean, really, every one of them, every one of them, man. It's fun to sit back and watch these guys go to work, and just, you know, every time they get on the mound, they really expect to pitch a complete game, and it's pretty remarkable. You know, Price, Matt Moore, Cobby, Helly, you know, obviously Helly's kind of had a little elbow. I think it was an elbow or shoulder. I forget. I think it was a little elbow issue.
Yeah, I think it is an elbow.
He's going to miss a month or so, but, you know, man, looking back and seeing that you guys have, like, you have guys like Archer, excuse me, to step in and you know, throw 97, 98 by people, it's pretty remarkable what they've done.
And you know what, Matt? It looks like you guys have fun, that you enjoy each other's company. I mean, when you look at you go on away trips, how does Joe sell this thing? Like, okay, we're going to go looking like Elvis. We're going to go looking like we're in high school. How does he sell this to you guys?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. He does a good job of selling, to be honest with you. I think that's one of his strengths is obviously managing people and convincing people to go along with the theme trips. There's always a couple guys that are like, well, this is kind of dumb, but you know, when they get involved, they tend to have a good time and you laugh at each other and you know, it kind of breaks up the monotony, to be honest with you.
Hey,
well,
Matt,
how about the
one thing? I hope he doesn't bring the snake right back in.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
I'm
you guys
sorry. Matt, I hope he doesn't bring the snake back in. I was a little leery about that.
Oh, I didn't go close to that thing. I stayed at least 30 feet from that thing. There's no chance. No chance of getting there.
It really looks like the bench is always loose with Joe. It is.
You know, and that's seeing what Loney did in signing back here for less money speaks volumes for the organization. The coaching staff and how they treat players and you know, the atmosphere that they've really created here in Tampa. I haven't played on, you know, a lot of different organizations, but I genuinely have fun here and enjoy my time here.
Oh, exactly. But I think it's so funny when Joe brought the Penguins, I looked at the program, and if you saw, I didn't get there till late, Matt, and I saw the picture. The Penguins are looking toward the refrigerator. They thought they should be in there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens this year.
Hey, Matt, you gotta take solace in the fact, you know, Price, for a normal person, has a decent year, but for him it's not a good year. Niemann doesn't throw a pitch, and you still make it to the playoffs. If you can get everybody healthy and run those guys out every fifth or sixth day, you're looking at another 92, 93, 94 wins, aren't you?
Yeah, without a doubt. Like I said, those guys are tremendous. You know, pitching has really carried this team and this organization from what it was when it was the Devil Rays, and that's how they really turned things around. So it's nice to know. Like I said, it's nice to know, knowing you have five starters, just in case something happens, you have a sixth or seventh guy that can come in and you know, really throw six, seven, eight innings, you know, on a good day. So, like you said, I mean, pitching's huge.
Now, Matt, what are you going to work on in spring training right now? Is there any fundamentals you want to improve from last year when you go to camp?
Oh, I got plenty of things to improve upon. I mean, you know, I don't know. I got some things in my mind that I want to do. Obviously, you know, really take those at bats against lefties. You know, learn and grow as much as I can, because those opportunities during the season, last season, came few and far between. So I'm looking forward to those. Other than that, you know, just preparing yourself mentally and physically for another full season.
Matt, I know you follow your division as close as anybody does, and as you look over the you know, the level of competition you're going to go up against, what do you think has been the best moves, or what do you think has happened over the winter that you really concentrated on?
That's tough. You know, I spent a little more time traveling this off season, kind of got away from everything. I've obviously known what our team has done and kept up with us, you know, other than the bigger names like Cano going to Seattle and the Yankees signing Tanaka, is how you pronounce his name, correct?
Yes.
Tanaka. So,
well, he did,
you know,
he did okay. He bought himself a 747 to bring his dog over. That was pretty good.
I know. I saw that.
Oh, no.
I saw that. I know. I'm going to have to rent that from him for something.
Gave the dog a lot of room to run up and down the aisle. I wonder if he had a, you know, had his safety belt on.
I tell you what, that was pretty incredible. But, hey, you know, hey, we'll see how he does and on the field. And, you know, as always, we're generally more worried about ourselves and what we have going on than anybody else. So it's always going to be a tough division. And, you know, we got to keep our heads down and keep grinding.
Right.
Mac, you get to play 81 games in the Trop. And everybody says, you know, well, it's not the greatest place, but at least you know it's going to be 68, 70 degrees, no wind, perfect
mm-hmm.
conditions
Thank
for
you.
A batter.
Yeah.
Where is your favorite place to play outside of the Trop in the American League? You know, guys have favorite parks they like to go to. They feel they fit better there. Where is yours as a hitter?
Park-wise, I've actually always liked Comerica. You know, that was my first big league game. Definitely something special about that park. You have the city in the background. You know, the fans are usually pretty good about coming out. They cheer for the Tigers pretty well, so it makes them fun and you know, exciting games. It's a nice field. Obviously, center field is pretty big out there, so, you know, that surprises me, even myself, on that answer. But I like Comerica.
Yeah, I remember you saying that to us last year. We asked you the same question, and you talked about the park there and from all the dimensions and so forth. So you haven't changed your mind, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
And where's the toughest place to play with the fans? You know, a lot of those right field bleacher bums. Now, we can't count Philadelphia because that's a given. You know, they're going to give you hell no matter where you are.
Thanks, Leo.
Hey, Leo, take it easy. Will you please? You're talking about heaven when you talk about Philadelphia.
Hey, you know, you expect that coming into Philadelphia. I understand that.
Yeah.
But where's the ones that ride you the hardest?
Yeah, man, anywhere in our division, really. Baltimore's bad, New York's bad, you know, Toronto, they have some tough hockey fans up there, so, you know, they'll wear you out. Oakland's pretty bad, you know, they usually get on you, especially as a right fielder, pretty good. So,
how about Boston?
Boston, obviously. Obviously Boston will wear you out. I mean, with what happened to us in the playoffs, you know, I know they were really getting on Will there. Pretty tough. Mm. So it's tough, man. They don't. There's no walk in the parks for sure.
But I still think, Matt, this could be one heck of a magic ride for this organization, and I can't wait to get it started. But I wish you the best luck in spring training, and I'll see you when you play the Yankees up there at Tropicana Field. And like we said before, whatever February, whatever day is. Baseball in October, and a souvenir to go along with that. With that.
Wait
baseball
a minute,
in October.
Tommy. You mean you're not going to see him in Port Charlotte? You're going to wait till I.
Wait,
you get your
down
car
to
down to Port Charlotte? You get lost or what?
The man gives you all this time on your show, and you're not even going to go pay to see the man play.
I know.
Tommy's not busy.
Don't say pay to Tommy. Don't say pay to Tommy. He thinks they charge you $5 for lunch. That's a, you know, big deal.
He and Lucy and Linus all have the same idea, 5 cents.
You got to understand, fellas, Tommy gets lost going to the bathroom at the Trop. So he usually eats trailer breadcrumbs.
I know.
Man, tough crowd, Tommy.
I
got to give him a lot of credit, though. At least he did get the soft pretzels with mustard in over there. You know, we go to a hockey game now, at least we get some soft pretzels and a little mustard. Yellow mustard.
I'll tell you what, we'll call up Tanaka, maybe get you maybe we'll get you a 747 down to Port Charlotte. How does that say?
Well, that sounds good.
I'll tell you what, Matt. some sushi down there.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Matt, the worst thing is these are his friends.
I know.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Madness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But
you guys are
welcome down to Port Charlotte. See you down there. It'd be great. I'll pick up Don and a white down there. We'd love to go down and see you up there and that. So
perfect.
It's just the
You got GPS, Tommy, in your car?
I just put gas in and run. I don't know.
Because if you don't have GPS, you may never make it.
I think I know how to get off.
God, you pick me up because there's only two seats on the broom.
Pick Lee up, dude. Frank, we'll meet down at Frank's house and go down there and see Matt play some baseball. We love to do it, Matt. I can't wait for it. I can't wait for the
absolutely.
Season to
start how much up. We appreciate you spending some time with us. That was really
great.
Yes,
great. Good luck.
Oh, yeah.
Go Rays.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot, guys. Good talking with you.
Good talking to you, Matt. Take care now. Great to have you on.
Hey,
oh,
Frank,
my God.
You have a GPS in your car so you can leave Tommy? I got a GBS in my car. A GBS is a wife that tells you where to go.
Last time Frank turned it on, he was heading over to Port Charlotte. He wound up in Vero Beach.
Yeah. Here you go. Hey, guys, I before I leave, and I'm going to have to go in about 10 minutes, but I got to change the subject to one thing, okay?
Okay.
Is Cooper the runaway coach of the year in the NHL? I mean, dear God, how is he keeping this group of players without a 60-goal scorer still in the race? They're second in the Atlantic and fourth in the division without their best goal scorer. What's he doing? Is he doing a Lemieux, fellas?
Well, I agree with you up till now, but we're only halfway through. Let's don't jump the gun here because he's going to get Stamkos back, obviously, in the next couple of weeks when this Olympic games are over and all that. But I agree with you. I think at this point in the season, it's got to be he's got to be right there. If he's not the leader, he's close to it.
No, you will.
Well, if there's a leader, I don't see it because you talk about a guy who's done the most with the least. Wow. I mean, Tommy, they own the Red Wings. I mean, what are they, 4-0 against the Red Wings?
4-0 against the Detroit Red Wings, Leo. It was a great game. Ben Bishop's playing great. All of our defensemen are stepping up to the thing. And people don't realize this, right? And I said that, John Cooper at the Skates just talked proudly. I said, John, these are the same players you had 2 years ago. And look what you did to Norfolk, 35-0. And these players love playing for John Cooper. And we're doing this without Steven Stamkos.
Tommy, the amazing thing is that they've cut their goals against average by close to a goal a game. That's unheard of. And
Leo, I tell you a secret right now, because Eric Brewer's finally stepping up. The guys are finally taking the body.
Your favorite guy.
I tell you, the reason why this Tampa Bay Lightning is winning, number 77 is finally in this prime right now, Victor Hedman. You take a Matt Carl from the Flyers. You take a Sammy Sowell. You take a Keith Ollie. Brewer is playing sometimes pretty good up there. You take these guys. Veterans and rookies, and Steve K. We'll get you on in a minute. Steve K. We're talking a little bit of hockey right now. Then you get these guys playing in a system right now, and that's why Detroit. That's why they're beating Detroit. They're going out west to play teams out west, and fans and everybody, get your tickets, especially Leo. Your group's coming down there in that Dallas game, April 5th. This team is special right now. This is a
Tommy,
special.
Let me ask you about the decision they made, or the indecision, I guess, coming into that last game about getting three goaltenders, bringing in a new goaltender as well, and then making a decision at game time who was going to play. I mean, Bishop's playing pretty well, isn't he?
It was a health issue
by Ben Bishop. He was nursing something up there, and I didn't know what was going on. But he played. But he played kind of hurt. And let's talk about that. I'd like to welcome Steve K to the show. Steve, you know the panel of our guys. Steve K, welcome. You, Don and Roger and Leo and Frank and everybody. Steve K, we just had Matt Joyce on. You just missed Matt Joyce. Welcome aboard, Steve.
Well, that's all right. Listen, I've been, as Tommy knows, I'm a hockey newbie, and I've been going down to the games and covering them on the covering them for the radio station down here on the weekends, and it's been a fascinating, eye-opening event for me. I don't mind talking a little hockey, but, you know, the one thing that blows my mind is, first of all, John Cooper reminded me so much of Joe Maddon in the mental preparation that he has that team. You know, he says the right things about, you know, when they lose a game at home, they don't like to lose. And a young team has to, you know, get to that point where they expect to win at home. I never knew if you guys, I mean, how is this Tyler Johnson kid undrafted, you know, and playing at the level he's playing at? Where'd he come from? That stories like that blow my mind. And Victor Hedman's never had I looked over his career, he's never had the kind of offensive force, you know, that he's displaying with the Lightning this year. He's getting up and he still has the speed and agility to get back on defense. So, hey, I'm absolutely loving it. The Lightning are just having a great time, and it's—I don't want it to end.
And Tommy, you got 10 of the last 14 at home, correct?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and that'll be great. Hey, Tommy, I gotta run.
Yes,
we got some stuff happening here at the house, so you know I gotta go. Gentlemen,
that's a little bit of a misnomer, isn't it, Leo? I mean, running and Leo Haggerty, that doesn't necessarily sound like it.
Boy, I'll tell you what, for a guy that's still looking to grow hair, that really hurts. Gentlemen, you have a great Valentine's Day, all right?
All right, Leo, thank you so much.
Take care, Leo.
Wow, it doesn't get better than that. Matt Joyce, Leo Haggerty, Roy Cummings, and Steve K coming on. Boy, it's just the hat trick of it just gets getting better, guys. I'm just thoroughly enjoying this Wednesday night tonight. Steve, I got a couple baseball questions for you up there in that.
Sure.
Retiring to Derek Jeter, what's that going to mean to the Yankees' final year probably in Derek Jeter's baseball life? What's that going to mean to him? And also signing for that Japanese pitcher. That was in Tampa for all the circus is in Tampa right now.
Yeah, the circus will be in Tampa shortly, and the Yankees are one of those teams, and I don't want to veer too far off. They could win 70 or win 90, and I would not be surprised by either. When they have the age of the team is a concern. Mark Teixeira's wrist is a concern. You know, you look at two guys, Nick Johnson and Mark DeRosa that had similar injuries, and neither one of those guys ever came back to what they were. But the additions of Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran and Masahiro Tanaka and Jacoby Ellsbury are going to make them a more formidable offense, along with, you know, Kelly Johnson and Brian Roberts, stuff like that. But Derek Jeter, I still don't know where he fits on the 2014 Yankees. I can't see him playing a lot of shortstop. That would leave quite a gaping hole on the left side of the infield. I don't see him being a right-handed complement over at third base, and I don't see him playing outfield. I don't know where Jeter's going to fit in on that team, and I'll be interested to see it. And we'll have to see if he can stay off that disabled list for the year as well. So,
well, the one thing I think you have to give him a lot of credit for, because, you know, here we are 2 or 3 days before they actually open camp and get started. But he went on record, boy. I mean, he really made it clear. We don't want to hear anything more about Rodriguez. We don't want to hear anything more about, you know, all that information is gone. And so you can see he's already taken his captaincy right to the fore before camp even started.
Yeah, a lot of people might, you know, in today's statistical analysis world, may not believe in the intangibles of running a locker room and chemistry, and it's a big debate, but when a guy like Derek Jeter steps forward and takes the mantle of the entire media pressure,
exactly,
you know, right away from everybody, and just puts an end to it right there, and basically has told the media, if you want to talk about this, you know, come to me or don't come to anybody. You know,
that's worth a few wins in my book.
Right, and also said, you know, we've talked about it as much as we're going to talk about it. So, you know, if you come to us now, no comment. That's going to be it. It's all over as far as we're concerned.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that is kind of a, you know, he's the last of the big four, I believe. What was that? Posada, Bernie Williams, Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter, you know. That was the core four of the Yankees. You know,
right.
Maybe you want to take Bernie Williams out and put Andy Pettit in.
Right, yeah.
You know, and call Pettit, Posada, Jeter, and Mariano the big four. And this will be the closing of that chapter. And it's kind of a fascinating look back on the New York Yankees from back when, you know, between 81 and 94, although they had some good seasons. They never made the postseason, and then along came these young kids, leading with Bernie Williams and then adding the core four later on, and the rest was basically history. The Yankees put up, what, four championship seasons?
Well, you made a good point about Jeter because, you know, you can look back over a long period of time in the history of the game. I mean, Luke Appling played until he was 41. You know, they always called him Aches and Pains. He was, you know, always complaining about being hurt, but he played every day. And, you know, there are not many players at 40, 41 are playing shortstop, you know, in Major League Baseball.
No, Omar Vizquel did it, but
right.
he was...
But on a limited basis.
On a limited
right.
basis. He's even playing, if you remember, Omar was actually playing some first base for the Toronto Blue Jays during
That's right.
As his career wound down, I think he may have played a little first base for the White Sox later on or before that as well. But we'll see where Jeter ends up. I think, you know, as the Yankees, you know, the big thing for them is, and I went back and I'm preparing a little bit of a preview of some of these AL teams, and I looked, and last year, out of 30 major league teams, they were in on-base plus slugging percentage. They were 27th at first base and 26th at catcher. Well, they went out and got Brian McCann. That takes care of the catching problem. But when you figure that you're 27th in baseball in production at first base, you know, and you're hoping that, well, yeah, and you're hoping that, you know, that was with basically Lyle Overbay, and I can't remember who his compliment was over there. Later, they had a little Mark Reynolds at the end of the year. But to not go out there and really, you know, they're putting a lot of stock into Mark Teixeira coming back.
Right. I also can't understand why, you know, I know there's been day after day after day, they're killing the New York papers with Drew. I mean, I can't understand if the Yankees feel at this point that Jeter is a real, as you just indicated, a real question mark as to what he can do as a shortstop or how many games he can play as a shortstop. Wouldn't you think it's incumbent upon them to, I mean, Drew's sitting there. It's not like he wants $40 zillion. I mean, he's primarily a backup player.
Right. Well, Drew's not a backup player. You know, he had a very good year with the Boston Red Sox last year, defensively and offensively. He put together, in terms of WAR, 3.4 WAR, which is a very good season at shortstop. Mm-hmm. Now, Stephen Drew is sitting out there, in my opinion, not because the market's flat or that he's asking $1 zillion. It's plain and simple. His agent is Scott Boras, so God knows what he's asking for. We've heard,
right.
okay, I'll
right.
sign a contract with you, but you have to give me a 1 year out. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, so the Yankees, I'm sure, are talking to Stephen Drew, but who knows what Scott Boras is trying to manipulate behind the scenes.
And that they're trying to work the Mets against the Yankees. You know, they're trying to say, well, the Mets need a shortstop as badly, and
right.
Drew would be
mm-hmm.
great for them. And the Yankees are just Cashman hasn't really made any comments at all. I mean, there hasn't really been too much out of the Yankee camp about Drew at this point. And the last I saw was, I think, last Friday, and they said there was even a chance he'd go back to Boston.
Yeah, now, again, it's all, you know, Scott. I wrote an article last week, guys, and I found a very interesting Scott Boras quote, and I compare it to when you watch one of these old-time movies when somebody gives away, the, you know, is bragging about how they're going to do something, they give away all their strategy, and then suddenly, you know, they lose the war. Back in 2000, and I'm sure everybody has that movie scene going through their head, you know.
Yep.
you just shut up and let the guy talk, and he tells you what he's going to do. Well, Boris basically was bragging about how late in the year he was still able to get his guys deals, you know? And he said, you know, as the bulk of the free agents disappear and all the non-tenders get picked off the market, he goes, GMs realize they have a lot of work to do before pitchers and catchers report. And he said, today, you know, signing now, you know, is building a lifeboat to avoid next season's Titanic. Well, to me, other agents figured out the beginning of spring training, pitchers and catchers reporting, is a leverage point. Let's take it all the way out to there, and GMs will give in at that point because they want to have their team in place before they get to spring training. And I think what we're seeing now is, thanks to Scott Boras opening his mouth, GMs, and one GM at the time of the article said, you know, in football, the guy keeps running the same play over and over, you know, eventually the defense will stop it. You have to mix it up. I think the GMs in baseball have figured out going to spring training, not having your team in place, isn't the big sin that it used to be considered. You know, you look at who's still available on the market, and the Yankees could still get Steven Drew, and so could the Mets. You know, Nelson Cruz can go to Texas, he can go to Seattle, Irvin Santana, all these guys can go somewhere, but I don't think the price that they're going to get is going to change just because pitchers and catchers reported.
Well, Roger and I talked earlier today, or emailed back and forth. Can you believe the Phillies are playing Burnett that much money to come back in for 1 year? At his age, with his record? I mean, it blows my mind that Ruben Amaro has done that.
I'll tell you what, if you have time when you're sitting there and you're thinking about why, take a look at what Hiroki Kuroda gets from the New York Yankees. Take a look at the two guys' numbers the last couple years. Burnett staying in the National League, playing with Pittsburgh. Look at Kuroda with the Yankees in the American League. And look at Kuroda getting $15 to $16 million a year. And then suddenly getting A.J. Burnett on a one-year $16 million. Doesn't seem to be. I mean, if the Yankees can do it with Hiroki Kuroda, why can't the how about Tim Lincecum the last 2 years? Absolutely been horrible. Can we agree on that?
Right.
Right.
2 years, $35 million.
But in Kuroda's case, though, I got to give Kuroda a lot of credit because I have to disagree with you about Burnett and Kuroda. You could talk about the even numbers, but if the Yankees had any offense at all last year, Kuroda would have won 18, 19 games.
Oh, I don't look at win-loss. That's not what I would ever look at. Is win. I mean, A.J. Burnett, I think, only won 10 or 11 games. A couple years ago in Philly, Cliff Lee won 9 games.
Right.
I'm the last person that's going to look.
I'm not looking at it from a win-loss standpoint. I'm looking at it from the level of his pitching over the number of games, the number of starts that he made, and how effective was he for 6, 7, 8 innings. And,
sure,
and Burnett,
I think Burnett was one of the league leaders in innings pitched, games started, strikeouts per 9 innings, limiting walks, keeping the ball in the park. I mean, all the stuff you want out of a pitcher. A.J. Burnett, this guy who couldn't pitch in New York, had limited success in Toronto, has found himself at a lower velocity in the National League the last couple years. And if you go by the model of, you know, what he should be being paid, $16 million in 1 year is not unreasonable. The way it works in the GM's mind right now is you take a look at his WAR value that nobody likes, you know, the statistics, but when it comes down to it, for each one WAR, it's basically $6 million is around the number. Now, he was a 4 WAR pitcher last year. Now, no one's going to pay him $24 million. I'm not going to be ridiculous to say that. But if you project that he can get you 3 WAR, you know, maybe regress a little bit, get you close to 3 WAR, then he's worth about $16 to $18 million. Wow. And that's how the contract comes about. If you look at all the players that sign, you'll find this. The recurring theme is this $6 million per WAR.
Well, I hope Ruben's right because I saw him pitch a lot of games for the Yankees, and I'll tell you, he scared me to death. Not only did he scare me to death on the mound, he scared me to death in the clubhouse. He scared me to death. There was nothing. There was nothing about that guy that would have made me go out and make a trade for him.
I did notice his last year in New York. and I wasn't watching the Yankees like you may have been every single day or whatever, but I believe he led the league in wild pitches and hit batters.
Oh, unbelievable.
You know, and that's not with Jose Molina catching them.
Yeah, but Steve, Roger wants to know how was
a lot of Byron games last year, and I was out there actually for one or two games, and he did pitch much better, and they said that he really was an asset and did a heck of a job with that young club. So, you know, who knows? I wouldn't have paid it either, but the experts are now saying the Phillies are in the hunt for at least a wild card by adding him. So what do I know?
Wow.
What teams aren't in the hunt
right,
for a wild
right.
card? When you look at, like, you know, maybe mid-August, how many teams are going to be more than five games away from
right.
a wild card spot?
Well, I wish Ruben a lot of luck, I hope. But, I mean, to me, he has now put together a team that's very, very close to an old age home. I mean, he has so many players he could go down with injury, and so many players that he's looking for to come back, like Howard, you know, who hadn't really played in two or three years effectively. And mm-hmm. This is what he's looking for. I mean, the Yankees, okay, the Yankees are looking for a second baseman to come back who's, 35, 36 years old. That's one
right.
guy. The Yankees are looking for 10 guys to do that.
Oh, well,
the Yankees kids too, Don. The Wee's kids too.
Yeah, wouldn't you agree that the Yankees are in the same exact boat as the Philadelphia Phillies? Let's take a look at the Yankees. They're hoping that Kelly Johnson is not a spring chicken, can platoon at third. Derek Jeter is not exactly young right now as their shortstop. Brian Roberts is their second baseman. You mentioned You mentioned Ryan Howard coming back at first. You're looking at Mark Teixeira coming back. You got two very good catchers. I don't think we have to debate the two catchers between
right.
the two teams. You know, they're
right.
very good. Carlos Ruiz and Brian McCann. You go out in the outfield, and the Yankees have Ichiro Suzuki, who's not exactly a young kid. You've got Ellsbury and Gardner, and then you've got Rafael Soriano. Alfonso Soriano, as your DH. Now, in your rotation, you've got Hiroki Kuroda, who's, you know, approaching his AARP card, and you've got CC Sabathia, who's not exactly a young chicken. Now,
well, even Joe said, which was, I don't know whether I give him credit or don't understand what he did, but, I mean, over the weekend he said, you know, that CC's no longer an ace. You know, he's the front guy in our rotation, but he's no longer an ace. it's pretty tough on CC. I mean, he wasn't an ace last year, that's for sure. I don't know what he's going to do losing all that weight this year. He lost a little bit of a hop on his ball last year, and where's he going to be this year? Who knows?
it's great. But aren't the two teams very similar when
yes.
you go on?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I mean, it's amazing that these two teams – I know the Yankees is a pressure of the fan base. They lost $50 million in ticket revenue last year over the previous year. That's just in ticket revenue. That doesn't include
right.
concessions and stuff. They really can never take a step back and say, you know what, you know, we're going to go get Michael Pineda, and that didn't work out. God, I got to be honest with you. I hope he does come back, even though he's in the same division
really?
Of the Rays.
Well, he was on the back page of the Post yesterday. He's down to, 235, 240, which is the weight that he did not come into spring training 2 years ago. He was up to 265, 270.
Right.
And they said he's had a very, very solid winter, and they are very optimistic about him. Now, whether that's going to, you know, turn into success, I don't know.
It is a comparable team to the Yankees. You know, when you look at position by position and age, but there's a couple of guys on there. They signed to minor league contracts. Bobby Abreu is one. I
mm-hmm.
personally don't see Bobby Abreu making the team. Pardon?
Neither do I.
They're giving him an opportunity, and maybe he'll hook up with some other team.
Right. I think, Roger, that's a courtesy to the fact that he played so well for him for a number of years before he went to the Yankees.
Exactly.
I think that's
I really
strictly
do.
A courtesy.
Yeah, because he's a left-handed hitter. They don't need any more left-handed hitters. They have to get some right-handed hitters so they balance the lineup. I think the key is going to be if Michael Franco could be the superstar at, 21, 22 years old that we think he's going to be. And, you know, I think Cody Ashby's going to be very good at third base. And then what they've got to do, and they're talking now about leaving Darren Ruff in the outfield, and he could fill in at first base, but they're moving Franco to fill in at first base. So who knows? But I think after you get
by wait a minute, Roger. You got to have Rollins playing. I mean, Rollins can't, he can't hit 215 he hit last year, 218, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Marlon Byrd's there too, correct?
Yeah, Marlon Byrd, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marlon Byrd's out in that outfield as well. And so is Don Brown still going to be out in that outfield as well.
And he looked like he had turned a corner last year.
I could see Don Brown going to right. And Ruff, instead of moving him around like they did last year, let him play in left. He's a decent outfielder. And then you got Revere in center. And the other thing is you don't know whether John Mayberry's going to be with the team or they're going to trade him. Who knows?
Now what did you just do with Marlon Byrd and his $8 million?
Well, you're gonna have him playing as a role player, you know, getting a lot of time, but you're gonna be doing more as far as left, right, right, left.
I agree with that. Only thing with the Phillies is it all starts with that, you know, with that pitching rotation up there.
Oh,
you know,
boy.
Cliff Lee. What's his name came out today?
Hamels
said he's a little bit behind. He's going to miss his first start, it looks like. He won't be ready for opening day. And A.J. Burnett. And, of course, now, I look at statistics and numbers. I do pay attention to that stuff. And if I could match a player, I'm going to give you his name. If I can match a worst player for a worst park, it would be Roberto Hernandez in Philadelphia.
Right.
I forgot about him.
Now,
God.
I'm not one of these guys who's going to tell you that Roberto Hernandez is one of my favorite players, but I have watched probably every one of his appearances in the major leagues, which is pretty much pathetic. You know, it just happened. I watched all his stuff with the Indians, and then he came to the Rays. But here's a guy that can't keep the ball in the park versus left-handed hitters. You know.
Yep.
And I can't think. I'm thinking to myself, where would be the worst place to put Roberto Hernandez? He's dominating right-handed. I'm not worried about that. But where's the worst place to put this guy? Probably Philadelphia. When I saw that they signed him to be in their rotation, I nearly fell off my bed thinking to myself, all right, maybe Ruben Romero really is an idiot. Now, what am I missing there?
Citizens Bank Park, he ought to have nightmares when he goes to bed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that Jonathan Pettibone will. I think he's going to wind up as a starter, and I think the question mark is the Miguel Gonzalez, the Cuban guy. You know, because initially every team in the major leagues wanted him, and then the Phillies got him for a much lower price.
You think
Pablo
Lund is going to be a starter? You think he's going to be a starter?
Yeah, he's going to be a starter.
Mm.
Ooh.
Yeah, what you're going to have is you're going to have Hamels, Lee, now you're going to have Burnett, and then you're going to have they talked about possibly Pettibone and Hernandez or Gonzalez. And, you know, Ethan Martin, I think, is definitely in the future going to be the closer, and that'll give them an opportunity to eat some of the salary but get rid of Pettibone.
Gentlemen, I got a question for you. Why in the Phillies get Roberto Hernandez, Stevie K, and I watched this guy. He couldn't get out at the first inning. And everything was like a long ball. Every time he pitches, a long ball out to right field. And imagine a warm summer night, and if he's starting pitcher for the Phillies, pitching in that ballpark and fed off, the one going out. Oh boy, not a pretty sight for the Phillies fans this year.
Well, if the Phillies are smart, he'd be very good in the bullpen against, you know, one of those guys that comes in when you're trailing or the other team has a series of right-handed hitters coming up. You know, he's very good against right-handers, and he has that high ground ball. And maybe that's what Ruben Romero and the scouts wanted from him all along,
and just said that they were putting him in the rotation so they didn't lose leverage against future starting pitchers that they'd be going at.
Right.
Well, actually, you're talking about him being a specialty pitcher, not a starter. You're talking about
a
specialist.
Yes, that's my guess.
They don't know if Mike Adams is going to be able to come back, and that's what they got him for last year, as the setup man for Papelbon, and it was going to be Bastardo as the lefty setup man. And that, you know, it didn't work out because then Bastardo got suspended for 50 years.
You guys ever recall the record that Roberto Hernandez set with the Indians?
I don't know.
2006, he has about 15 outings where he's unhittable in the bullpen, you know? The Indians trade Bob Wickman over to, I believe, back to Milwaukee or Atlanta.
Right.
And they anoint Hernandez, who has like a 1.6 ERA in relief, as the team's closer, right? Well, in the span of a week, he blew four games. All dramatic. I'm not talking like, you know, where you get a walk and then the guy bunts over and then a little single. We're talking three-run leads where the team puts up four or five runs on him. He comes back a couple days later with a two-run lead and they put up five. I mean, it was the he ends up going to the minors after this. He comes back as a starter. And then the next, you know, he ended up going 1-10, and then it took him forever to finally get that next win as he came back as a starter in 07. But that was the first sign of his Roberto Hernandez's mental. He has a little bit of a problem with confidence, you know. And now and that's another reason. I always look at that. I say this guy's going to Philly.
Well, those with our fans of Philadelphia and the Philly fans, oh my God, I can just see it now. Every time when he pitched again for the Rays, I said, oh no, we're gonna be here for 5 hours watching this guy pitch.
Well, let me ask you one sidebar question. One, how do you think Sandberg's gonna do with Larry Bo as the bench coach? How do you think the two of them are gonna mold this team together?
Who are you asking that one?
You.
Oh, me. I'm a bit. hey, I'm sorry. First of all, I don't know what kind of manager Ryan Sandberg will be, but I've always said that Larry Bo is a great bench guy to have. I mean, he could be the sensitive, caring guy if you want him to be, and he could chew you out if you need him to be that, and he knows how to play the game between the player and manager. I've always said that. I've always compared him to, or actually made a reverse comparison. To me, Manny Act is the same guy. Never let that guy be a manager ever. But
right.
have him on your bench because he's a great facilitator.
Right.
And I think Philadelphia is in one of those, like the Yankees, you know, if Ryan Howard comes back even a semblance of what he was, and we're not talking about the All-Star. We're talking just a good first baseman. Jimmy Rollins turns it around. Chase Utley stays healthy. Things turn around, and Cole Hamels comes back to what he was before last season, and Cliff Lee gets back on the snide, and Papelbon, I believe, will be closing games. Mike Adams is, you know, just shortening the game. A lot can happen that'll make Ryan Sandberg that'll make him look good. That'll have nothing to do with what Ryan Sandberg did.
Roger, what do you think?
Well, I agree with that, but I personally think that Sandberg is going to be a great manager. I think, you know, here's a Hall of Famer that was willing to pay his dues in the minor leagues. He wanted to find out whether he liked it, and then to look at his former teammate, Mike Schmidt, you know, who went into the minors to test it for a year, and he found out not his cup of tea.
Right.
And I think that he wanted Boa as his bench coach. And they were just saying today that one of the keys, I just read it a minute ago, one of the keys for the Phillies is this new pitching coach. Was it McClintock or something like that? Who I didn't realize he had so many years in the big leagues as a pitcher.
Well, I sort of agree with you. I think that I think Ryan Sandberg will be a very solid manager for the Phillies. I think the biggest mistake made this year, or the last, let's put it this way, the last 14 months, is the fact that Ryan Sandberg didn't get the job in Chicago. I think they made a tremendous error in Chicago not hiring him as the manager.
You're exactly right, Todd.
Let me ask you guys this.
Real quick, the pitching coach is Bob McClure. 19-year major league veteran. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Guys, I know Bob McClure, the pitching coach for the Phillies now.
Yeah, he's the pitching coach for the Phillies.
Oh my, you're kidding? Because Bob McClure, here's a true story, guys. When he pitched along with Ray Searle, pitching coach for the Pirates, and a good friend of mine, Bob Gibson, who lives in the Philadelphia area, they all played for the Milwaukee Brewers in 1985-86, and I had Bob McCord, Ray Searle, up to my parents' house with Bob Gibson, and we went out a couple times after the games. Oh my God, he'll be freaked out when he sees me in Clearwater in a couple weeks. Like,
hey, Bobby,
oh my God, what are you doing here?
Pitching career, and he was the Red Sox manager for Bobby V. In 2012 with the Red Sox. Of course, that was a disaster with the, Bobby D. But
oh boy, was it ever!
Let me throw a little Bob McClure story into the mix from Terry Francona's book that he wrote last year.
Oh,
he didn't indirectly blame Bob McClure for the pitching woes of the Boston Red Sox, but he did say that John Farrell is an in-your-face guy that expected excellence, and he expected Josh Beckett to be the leader and everybody to follow Beckett. If they didn't, John Farrell would get in their face on their routine. Mm. Then he said Bob McClure is a pitcher's manager, meaning he allows the pitchers to dictate to him the routine and how they're going to go. And he said it was night and day between Farrell and McClure in how to approach pitching. And he said that led to the pitchers having the problems at the end of the year because they didn't keep up with the regimen that John Farrell had put in front of them all those years. Now, that was very interesting to me. And then when Farrell got hired, Tito, one of the first things he said is, watch out for those pitchers. They're all gonna come back.
That's right.
I'll tell you, I think there are a few coaches that really make I think the manager and the pitching coach have to be in this on the same page. You got to make sure that the guy that you hire is your pitching coach. The rest of the coaches, maybe your bench coaches, and I think Larry Ball will do a great job. He was a great third base coach. I think he's going to be a tremendous asset. But for me, to tell me that this guy's a hitting instructor, he's going to make a big change. this guy's a pitching coach. Yeah, we had the greatest pitching coach in the world in Atlanta when he had pitchers. When he got to Baltimore, what did he do?
He hung out with Sam Perlazzo.
He's doing talk show radio in Atlanta now, Don.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, I think coaches are so you're not going to change a guy that can hit hits. You might be able to take, like Larry Bowe, we knew Billy DeMars well, and he really worked with Larry all those years coming. And he made him the best kind of hitter he could make him, and Larry Ball followed it. But, I mean, you're not going to make a guy a hitter. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Right.
Exactly. I came across a great article in an old Sporting News about 2 weeks ago that I sent out to a friend of mine. It was about hitting coaches, and this goes right into what you're saying. Back in 1988, from spring training in 1988 to spring training in 1999, there were four new managers in Major League Baseball between the two spring trainings, right?
Right.
Ten new hitting coaches. Now, the Atlanta Braves, it might have been 90, might have been 88, 80, or 98, 99, but the Braves had won the division, so it was 98, 99. And they had this great team, a great offensive team, but they fired their hitting coach and replaced him with Don Baylor because Ryan Klesko and Galarraga Ryan Klesko wasn't hitting, and they figured that Don Baylor could do what he did for Galarraga and get Ryan Klesko to start hitting again.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Braves are number two in the league in runs scored. They had a great offense, but yet they still fired the hitting instructor. Ten new hitting instructors while only four managers. So as you just said, the manager and the hitting coach should probably be on the same page, but if you can hit, you can hit.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
And,
that's
how
the
about
whole...
the Texas Rangers? Supposedly they had the best hitting instructor at all baseball for, what, 20 years, they kept saying. We don't understand why he's not a manager. He's without question, the number one hitting coach in baseball. Same thing in Kansas City when Brett was out there. Oh, yeah, we've got the best hitting coach in all of baseball here. Well, yeah, if you're Brett, you can do those things. If you're not Brett, you're not doing it.
The guy's name was Rudy Yamayiro.
Right.
And he's over in Chicago. Yeah. He went to Chicago, and I'm not sure if he's still there or not.
I'll tell you one thing. If he is there, you don't have to worry about too many balls going out of the park in Chicago.
That's right. I knew
they didn't give Sarge the hitting coach job, Don, when they got rid of him in the broadcast booth.
They should have, Roger.
I agree.
They should have, like you say. You know, the pressure on with the Rays, Steve Kaken agreed about this, is Derek Shelton gets all the heat from the Rays. You know, every year he gets all the heat, but Derek Shelton making hitters out of Longo and also Will Myers right now. And Derek Shelton was the key to a couple of Cleveland hitters up there. And that's I still believe in, you know, Derek Shelton is a good hitting instructor. The kids listen to him when he hits up there and that. And that's is this the media break? Guys, is this the media brings everything out about hitting instructor this and that? You know, and
hey, listen, talking about the Rays, you got to start with their pitching coach. I mean, there's a guy who's been through developing young guys. He's one of the people that I'd look at right now and say, if I had to choose somebody to be a pitching coach, here's a guy that has taken a series now of, what, four or five guys from the minor leagues, brought them up, and they've been outstanding pitchers.
Oh,
and my question is why Neil Allen, who gets most of the credit from these kids, hasn't been picked up as a major league pitching coach, but yet the Rays continue to have him as their minor league pitching coordinator, and each and every one of these kids that comes up credits the work of Neil Allen for their success.
Right.
Mm. Great point, Steve. That's a great point. Neil Allen played a great year had a great career with the New York Mets. Maybe he's happy where he's at down there. Maybe, you know, maybe people know what we don't know about Neil Allen, but maybe he's happy where he's at. And being a Rays fan, just keep him there. Just watch those minor league pitchers. Yeah. Just keep him down there.
Tommy, you don't make any money in the minor leagues. You don't think he wants to be up on the top shelf?
I know. No way.
You know, what also gets lost when you talk about hitting coaches, they always focus on who, you know, like as Tommy just did, you mentioned Will Myers and Evan Longoria, and you mentioned the players they have, but what you seldom hear anybody talk about is how about the players that leave the Rays? And when you take a look around, when you say, well, look at the year Casey Catchman had while he was in Tampa and then he left. Take a look at the year that Jeff Kepinger had in Tampa. And then he left. You take a look at B.J. Upton's career in Tampa and then what it was when he left. You start lining these guys up and you start saying to yourself, you know, there's something about – it can't just be that these guys – like I heard a talk show host here say that, you know, James Loney was having a great year because he was because of the turf at Tropicana Field and because he's a ground ball type hitter. These balls – well, he hit 351 on the road to lead all of Major League Baseball. And he hit 250 at Tropicana Field, you know. But the perception was, it must be the turf that's helping James Loney out.
Well, I know Roger and I talked about, and so did Frank and Tommy. You know, they got the wrong Upton to be the star out there. The guy of Kansas City is three times the player that his brother is, and you don't have all the trouble.
Right.
Definitely. Which kid are you talking about
in Kansas City? Because they got both Uptons in Atlanta, Justin.
Yeah, Justin came in and he had a very solid career in Kansas City. Upton here hit some home runs. It was streaky, but he wasn't nearly the player. It wasn't nearly the player his brother was.
No. Right. I mean, this. Justin. Justin Upton is great in Arizona. He went to Atlanta. Then BJ took the money and ran. And look what a year BJ had. I feel so bad for BJ having that tough. Well, look at Carl Crawford, guys. He took the money in Boston and ran. And he had dismal years. Then he got out of Boston, went to L.A. Finally, the Carl Crawford that we know, hitting the baseball,
well,
stealing
Tommy,
the base
paths. Hurt too. You got to give
right.
him a little
oh, yeah,
bit of a
he
pass.
Got hurt.
He got
oh, yeah,
hurt then.
He...
And that was also the Bobby Valentine year too.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
See, I said, you know, you just brought up Casey Kotsman. And as I recall, wasn't he in the trade for Teixeira when the Braves
yes,
got him?
Yes, he was.
That's what I thought. And I can remember hearing on the radio, reading in the paper, about that this guy was just a tremendous ball player. And I felt, you know, not really knowing a lot about him, that he was going to be the first baseman for the Braves for years to come. But obviously that didn't work out.
Well, what's really interesting is remember when I think Teixeira was with the Angels and he signed with the Yankees.
Yeah, right.
Right. Do you know, and that was under the old compensation system where the Angels got the Yankees draft pick.
Okay.
Do you know who they drafted with that pick?
Ooh.
Yes. The number one player, he's one of the two best players in the American League right now.
Oh, the kid from Pittman, New Jersey.
That's right.
Mike Trout, right?
Mike Trout, yep. The draft pick of the Yankees when they signed Teixeira, they lost their number one pick over to the Angels who took Mike Trout. I always find that funny. Teixeira was also
That's a great point.
Great point, yeah. Steve, I tell you.
Now, Teixeira went over to Atlanta, and the big... from the Braves side of that deal, and I want to say that this is because he was involved in two. When he went to Atlanta, they gave up, I'm going to guess here, and if somebody here follows the Braves a little bit closer, was it Saltalamacchia? Netfeli? Netfeli, Feliz, and one other guy went over in that trade. That the Braves sent over. Now, the big one in that trade was Saltalamacchia.
Right.
Netfoli Feliz was a young power arm that they got in that deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Braves, the following year, sent the Teixeira out to the Angels.
And then he went to the Yankees as a free agent. You're right.
Then he went to the Yankees as a free agent. But I want to say the Braves gave up one more player of value in that deal. For Teixeira for half a year or for a year and a half.
You know, the amazing thing about Teixeira, how many players as good as Teixeira has been have been to the number of clubs that he's been in that period of time? I mean, he's got to be one of the few players in all of baseball that have played for that many organizations, all good teams, but keeps moving.
To the Yankees, that was his move. There's no doubt about it because I never thought he'd leave Atlanta.
They thought he was going to be in Baltimore. They thought he was going to be a hometown guy and give them a shot in Baltimore, but he didn't.
Right. Hometown discount.
You know, and he was with the Braves, and he had played at Georgia Tech. So, I mean, he had a lot of fans right there for him.
Exactly. I mean, that's the question about that. Atlanta should have still kept Mark Teixeira up there and that. I still think he'd been a great fit up there. But who knows what's going to happen with the New York Yankees right now. It's going to be so sad to see Derek Jeter. I know he is in a rival division, the American League East, for all the Rays fans like myself and the Indians fans, but Derek Jeter is a one-class individual, guys. I mean, I remember when I first met him, he came on very gracious, and he always said, "Hey, buddy, come here. What do you got for me?" So I always came in on my day up there, and I always was talking with him up there, and he's such a class individual. I hate to see him. I want to see him go out strong up there. And I mean, I like to see the Yankees get in the playoffs just for do it for Derek Jeter because he's Mr. Yankee and I respect him tremendously. And he's going to be a great baseball. He's a great baseball
Tommy,
player.
This is the last year of his contract, and yet you know, Mariano Rivera made the decision before the season started, and they honored him all around baseball last year. I don't think Jeter is going to do anything like that. I'll be very surprised if he does.
Really?
And I also don't believe in his own heart of hearts that he's not going to be able to play shortstop for the Yankees this year. I think he really believes that ankle and leg are 100% and that he's going to be able to play effectively. So, you know, I think a lot of people have asked about retiring. He doesn't even mention retiring.
No, it's just he hasn't had, you say play effectively, he hasn't had range at shortstop in 5-6 years, and now he has a bum ankle and a bum leg.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as a Rays fan, I certainly want him at shortstop every game that he can possibly get out there. I mean, I want him to make 140 games started at shortstop, and at the same time put Kelly Johnson at third base. I'll be happy as hell.
Well, I'll tell you, I watched Dick Groat in Pittsburgh for 10 years, and he couldn't move 5 feet, but he never missed the ball. Every time they hit it went right to him.
Hey guys, just to backtrack for a second, I did look it up. The Braves gave up Elvis Andrews, Net Folly Feliz, Matt Harrison, and Salka Lamakia to get to Shera, who they then traded, you know, the trade deadline the following year for Kachman.
Right.
Kachman was there, and that's all they raved about. He was, you know, because they knew that Teixeira was going to be a free agent and not going to be staying. But I just couldn't believe when I've seen Coxman move around as much as he has for a young player who was expected to do great things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, anybody have a surprise team in the American League and National League that you're looking at right now?
What's the lead off? I guess
well, you know,
probably.
I'll tell you what, I follow the Braves, you know, fairly closely, and I think with some of the moves that they've made, I don't think that they've improved. I think that they've gone down a little bit. You know, they've lost O'Flattery. He's gone, and he was a good setup guy.
Well,
yeah.
I know a lot of people last year jumped on a bandwagon with Washington, and I think they've got the best club going into spring training now. I don't know if they're going to win the pennant, but if I had to put money, if I were out in Vegas and they said to me, who would you bet on, I'd bet on Washington.
Over the Dodgers?
To get there. And, you know, not about winning the World Series, but I'm saying get to the championship, the National League Championship Series.
Okay, so you'd have basically, you know, the Nationals going, you know,
against the Dodgers, if everything goes. How much, I don't remember, I asked Henry this afternoon about this. How much did the Dodger franchise actually sell for? And we know what the TV package was. What was the whole package together? How much?
I want to say $2.2 billion.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's what I want to say. And if I'm wrong, forgive me, but I want to say it blew all estimates out of the water. They had like 1.4.
I just never saved the article. I was trying to look. I looked in it all through the computer today to find out what it was. And so I asked Henry. He's taking a look at it now to see if he can come up with a number. But you may be right, $2.2 billion. I couldn't find it.
It included all the land surrounding Chavez Ravine.
Right,
and
the parking.
And I believe he got the parking thrown in there as well, which is quite a lot of money, you know. But the Nationals are an interesting team. You know, they picked up Doug Fister. That was quite a coup for them, if you ask me, you know, to fill off that rotation. When you start looking at Strasburg and Zimmerman and Gio Gonzalez, and now you throw Fister at number four. That's one hell of a rotation. I was convinced all winter long that the Braves would come hard after David Price and give up Alex Wood in the deal. You know, they would. I had a trade that had Christian Betancourt, a young catcher, Alex Wood, and I wanted Lucas Sims, a young pitcher who's highly touted. Those are my three, and then I had a fourth player thrown in. You know, and then I had the Rays giving up Joyce and Sean Rodriguez, and Price and Sean Rodriguez, because Rodriguez can fill in at so many spots for the Braves.
So your pick right now is the Dodgers to win it all in the National League.
Oh, in the National League, I'm torn between several teams. I like the Braves, even though they haven't won a playoff series in 8 years.
Right.
you know, the fact that they're younger than most teams, I value 162 games to get there. You know, and they have the minor league farm system that could go get somebody at the deadline.
Right.
And the financial resources to absorb the rest of a contract. So Braves, Nationals, Dodgers, and I'm still trying to sift through. I also, my surprise team is the Padres out there out west.
Yeah, I like the Padres.
Is Black still the manager of the Padres?
Yes, Buddy Black's still out there, and
he is still
a good friend of mine. Buddy's a good friend of mine, Don.
I'll tell you, you talk about it. Not very many pitchers become managers. He's been there quite a long time. I got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, he's been able to withstand a lot of pressure, and he's still with them.
Yeah, right now there's a couple guys. There's John Farrell right now, and there's Buddy Black, and then what's his name? Who's out there? Bochy wasn't a pitcher.
Bochy was
catcher. Sure. Catchers are usually your managers, you know.
Right.
That's
Mike Socha stole the Mike stole the Angels. Knock on wood for that. Mike's looking forward to seeing Mike when he comes in the trough this year.
He's still got a few years left on his contract. I think that saved his life last year.
Yes. Yes. Thank God he's still there.
Yeah, that was an interesting season. That's a team. Now there is a team that I don't get. They didn't do anything to improve that pitching staff, and I don't understand why. I mean, after Jared Weaver and C.J. Wilson, they're void of arms, you know? You talk about guys like Irvin Santana, who they're familiar with, and Ubaldo Jimenez, and now suddenly Artie Moreno's worried about going over the luxury tax threshold. I'm not buying it.
No, I'm not either. I guess, Steve and everybody, my picks are – you know, my pick, of course, are Philadelphia Phillies, and I'm going to go my surprise pick, Pittsburgh Pirates, to win that division.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
They certainly had a good year last year. Whether everything went their way last year, can they do it 2 years in a row and really take the advantage of what they did last year and step forward with it with more experience? I'd be interested to see, Tommy.
I think they can because – look at the manager. Look at their pitching coach. I try to get hold of their pitching coach, Ray Surge, get him on for next week's show. Look at Andrew McCratchen. It leads around McCratchen. It's the same thing, Steve. You remember with the Indians, all good. What did it lead around? Kenny Lofton, your center field, your catalyst.
Yeah,
your leadoff guys are catalysts of the baseball team. And Don and Roger and Frank and Steve, I gotta still believe in our Philadelphia Phillies. You said to win a division. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm calling for right now. I'm going to.
And there you go.
Phil's won a division, and I guess it's going to win the Central. Mr. John Adams and company, you know that team is, Steve. The Tribe's going to win the Central this year, so it's just my off-the-record projections right there.
Hey,
well, I'd like to see the Phillies still have three years.
Tommy's smoking it's Lackey Weed again.
Hey, Tommy boy, did you know that Ray Searage was property of the Indians for about a dozen days?
Yeah, he told me about that, right?
Yeah, he was part of the Indians. Hey, the Pittsburgh Pirates confuse me, you know, and I understand catching lightning in a bottle. They collapsed in 11, they collapsed in 12,
right?
And then they rode the crest of emotion with some young players like McCutchen and Starling Marte over there in the outfield, and A.J. Burnett at the top of that rotation. A great comeback year from Francisco Liriano. And when Jason Greeley got hurt, Mark Melancon stepped right in. And then the season ends, and they let Garrett Jones go. They let A.J. Burnett go. They go out there, and they sign Edison Volquez, who's a big project similar to Roberto Hernandez as in terms of a project. And I'm trying to figure out is where are the Pittsburgh Pirates going? I mean, Garrett Cole for a whole year. They've got some great arms down in the minors. But to not replace A.J. Burnett in that rotation and not adding a first baseman to complement Gabby Sanchez, you know, after letting Garrett Jones go, you know, they acquired Justin Morneau and Marlon Byrd, and they let both of those guys go.
Right.
So both those guys got paid. I'm not going to sit here and say you should, you know, spend money unwisely. But it just seems like a lot of the good things that team did, they're kind of relying on Marte and McCutchen and Neil Walker and the rest of these guys to carry them again. You know, Alvarez, you know, I just don't know how that's going to work for an entire 162-game season again. I would have liked to see that team attack with a little bit more depth. Maybe go out and get Moreland from Texas to be their first baseman with Gabby Sanchez or something to that effect.
Well, one of the things I said about Burnett earlier, and again, I have to give him credit last year, because whenever they went into a little bit of a slide, would lose 2-3 games, you know, he would come out and stop the losing streak. I got to give him credit for that with Pittsburgh last year. I'm not a Burnett fan. He would not be a player that as I said earlier, that I would go out and try to seek to help my ball club. But I have to give him credit on what he did last year.
Yeah. Gentlemen, well, I'll tell you,
in Pittsburgh, they said the thing that really turned him around last year was getting out of New York. He's just not a guy that can handle the New York media. And, of course, he's going to have more media in Philadelphia, but not as much
yeah.
in New York. But I will say this, Steve, about the Pirates, having watched them a couple of times and read a lot about them. I really think their management has their act together. They've really done a great job of turning the program around, and I think they've got a very well-stocked minor league program, and I think that's why I think you'll be very surprised. I think they're going to do very well again this year.
Well, Roger, you know, it's almost impossible to believe, and you can throw two or three teams in this pile. If you just took a dart and threw it, the last 20 years, you got the number one picks, number one. How can you not have a farm system or team that's at least competitive? I mean, it seems
well,
really
exactly
impossible,
right. they
it's impossible to lose with every player.
They have
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Ask Baltimore, Kansas City.
That's right.
You know?
Right, gentlemen.
I mean,
right.
Baltimore, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh are three teams that just found mud every time they drafted. Now, the funniest story, though, you are right about their management having their stuff together, because Neil Huntington is a very, very shrewd guy when it
very
comes to
true.
Running, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want, they drafted with, like, the number one overall pick, Brian Buxton, I believe. Isn't that Buxton? I can't remember his name now. He ended up exploding around baseball for a number of years. Now, remember, you're holding a press conference back then, the GM, and you have the number one overall pick in the draft. And you tell your fan base, I think we got a solid number three future starter today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, can you imagine when the Rays, you know, you get the number one overall pick and you take David Price and you look out and you say, we think we have a solid future number three starter.
Hey, gentlemen, I hate to. Frank says tick, tick, tick. Steve, can we get you on next week? Talk some more baseball. Love having you on, Steve.
Hey, baseball season's back. I'm ready.
All right,
okay.
Don.
Thanks for joining us.
And it was nice talking to you.
Oh,
I'm
going
to meet you when I'm down in Florida.
Phil, it was a great show. A lot of fun tonight, and thank you very much. And we'll all get together next week.
Thank you for coming on, sir. Roger, stay warm in Atlanta.
Have a great week. God bless.
God bless, too. Frank, we'll wrap this up. I'd like to thank Roy Cummings from the Tampa Tribune. I'd like to thank Matt Joyce from the Tampa Bay Rays, Steve Kay, our baseball analyst, Mr. Leo Haggerty, Mr. Don Henderson, a Philadelphia legend, our Orlando legend, Mr. Roger Hendler, and most of all, Frank, great job for you, Frank, as always. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, Brad Wright Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania, where to purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com, the Abbey Course, St. Louis University, where four people can play for $80. Give Tom a call, 352-588-2016, Tampa Golf and Country. Give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. Frank, God bless. Give your family my very best, and take it away, sir.
You're the same, Tommy. Ladies and
gentlemen,
thank you for listening tonight. The program is brought to you with grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Paris. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, please say thank you to them. It means a world of difference to them. Remember, when they put that uniform on every day, they don't know whether they're going to come home or not. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Silvers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Nardolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. MIT Officer Sean Collier. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. And our latest addition, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, Rose, up to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your field and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.